Welcome back. Welcome back to the Educated Guest Podcast. It is 2017. I'm your host, Czar F, a.k.a. Caesar Does It on the Twitters. That's D-U-Z-I-T. This is episode nine, and we got a real special guest today. His name is Roberto Rodriguez. Roberto has a lot of experience as a teacher, but just as important, he's held several positions in the teachers union and is now a leader at the state level. So we got him up in here to ask him all kinds of stuff about teachers becoming active in the political arena, about engaging new membership, sort of. And of course, you know, what's the next 4 years going to look like? And speaking of activism, union activism, today's episode we want to dedicate to a very special teacher that has left this earth. His name is Tommy Flanagan. He goes by the nom de guerre River Peace. And River Peace, you know, he exemplified everything that an educator should be. He was active in the classroom, and he was extremely active outside the classroom. He told it exactly like it was, no beating around the bush. And when push came to shove, he stood on the line. He went out there on the street. He put his money where his mouth is, and he put it on the line, like I said. You know, I'm active in my union, but when things got deep in North Dakota, that was something that I felt really dear to my heart, and I actually considered going out there. Having a family, having kids, I could only contemplate it, you know, but River Peace put his life aside because this was his life, and he went out there to North Dakota to the camp, and he was, he did something that I could only dream about doing, and that is basically putting your life on the line for something that you dearly, dearly believe in. So again, this episode is dedicated to the memory of River Peace. I hope that you teachers that are new or just aren't active, I hope that his memory inspires you to become active. And having said that, all right, ladies and gentlemen, episode 9, Educated Guest Podcast, hashtag Ask a Union Boss, Roberto Rodriguez. Here we go.
So you guys do this together.
Kind
of. I try to get him in when I can, but there's just times when I have to record without him.
Okay, because I've heard one episode. I think I've heard one or two episodes, and it's just been you.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It was him in his closet. Huh? That was the weird one.
We're pretty good at going back and forth, and we do have different opinions on some subjects in education. So
good.
It kind of works out. All right. So welcome to episode 9 of the Educated Guest Podcast. You can find me on Twitter, Caesar Does It. That's D-U-Z-I-T. And I got my man across the table from me. Say something, please. It's awkward.
Rodrigo Arancibia.
Mr. A.
Mr. A underscore A Y Y Y on the Twitters.
And we have a special guest in the house with us today. Introduce yourself, sir.
Thank you. Roberto Rodriguez, former president of Sweetwater Education Association. Currently on the CTA Board of Directors, and you can find me at Roberto63 on the Twitters.
That's right, on the Twitters. We like it, we like it. So, Roberto, real quick, before we jump into, like, any deep discussion, just tell us, like where are you from, and how did you get involved with the teachers union?
Well, I've been in the district in Sweetwater for, God, since 1987. That's, what, 30 years now?
Oh, wow.
So it's been a long time. And the interesting part is when I first started, I wasn't involved at all. And I don't know if I was anti-union, but I certainly didn't want much to do with the union.
Okay.
But it was a friend of mine, Rene Flores at Chula Vista High School, that at one point we were in one of those years where it was a contractual crisis going on. And he basically takes me aside and says, look, we need you. We need you to participate. We need you to take part in this. We need your help. This is what's going on. So he explains. So by the end of that conversation, it was during lunch, and by the end of that conversation, not only had I signed up with the union, but I was a site rep, and I was putting together, you know, putting flyers into people's boxes. So I was active at that point. And then I think my biggest growth came when we started Otay Ranch High School. There was a very small staff, and I was one of the few people that had some experience being a site rep. And so I was a site rep at Otay Ranch and just started getting more involved from there.
Okay. And you originally are from where?
So I'm originally here from San Diego.
Oh, okay. So where'd you go to high school at?
So here's the deal. I originally,
here it goes.
The story.
So I was born here in San Diego, lived here, and then my parents moved to Tijuana for when I was maybe 5 or 6, somewhere around there. Mm. So I actually went to school down in Tijuana through high school for most of my life. Yeah. And then once I graduated from high school down there, I went to University of San Diego, which is...
Okay. All right. And I never knew that about you because, you know, I've never heard him speak Spanish.
Oh, right on.
But then again, I don't
speak Spanish.
Oh, wait, why is that right on? Wait. I've never spoken Spanish to him, so that would be the reason why.
Why USD instead of
San Diego State?
Yeah, because obviously it's a superior university, right? I mean, San Diego State versus USD, or am I just?
I think you're telling the stories now.
Am I fictitious lies? No, I don't think so. But no, seriously, why USD versus UCSD or the Mesa?
You know what? It kind of fell that way, right? My mom had always been really involved in the church down in Tijuana, right? And so through some of the people she knew down there, they basically said, well, you know, we can give them a letter of recommendation to go to USD and all that stuff. So I ended up going to USD and applying, and, you know, it's the difference between a private college and a public college in terms of how I was treated when I went to apply versus San Diego State. It was like, stand in that line, fill out this form, bring it over here, then stand in the other line. And so it was just, it ended up being that move.
Gotcha. And it's important that you bring up that when you first started, you weren't necessarily anti-union, but you certainly weren't interested in belonging. And I don't know if I'm correct in saying that Rodrigo's kind of that way right now too. Right. He's got some. He's got some concerns.
They're not concerns. You know, it's just I identify with that first part of your story. Just not really caring either way. If I need to get involved, I will get involved. I know when we had our the last board that we had, I was a lot more involved with the decisions that were happening at my site. But again, I don't know. I haven't taken that site rep leap yet. Especially now that I'm not at the site.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, I'm totally interested in about hearing the other side over that transition of what it was like from just being a teacher minding your own business and kind of worrying about your own classroom. Now you're worrying about everybody. You're responsible for everybody. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about that experience.
You know, it's really interesting because when you realize, I mean, just open your contract, right? Right. When you open your contract and you realize that stuff that we take for granted, like your prep, right? Your prep period. The fact that, you know, there's only a certain number of duties that you have to do after school. The fact that you have health benefits. The fact that, you know, there you can't be asked to work after your duty hours, etc. I mean, all of these like little things that we tend to take for granted as teachers weren't gifts of the district, right? They wouldn't be in place where they're not this union that fought for these items for us. I think when that realization came and when the realization that the way you get that is through our involvement in these activities, these union activities, I think, that was just like clarity for me, right? It became really important to continue the work that I had seen. Now I mentioned Rene Flores, but there were generations of people that right. that had worked through, you know, to get us those things. So that became just really important. This idea that that we didn't have to, that we didn't depend on the district to give us what we got, that we were able to fight for these things. And sometimes it was a fight, and sometimes it's just part of, you know, the negotiation process.
Both sides recognizing that, you know, this is probably what's best for teachers and students.
Absolutely.
And I wonder, to me, again, I'm the asshole in the room who's like, yeah, okay, but how much of this is because we're just a fucking huge district, or how much of this is really because, like, terrible stuff is going on at school sites, right? And that's kind of like I was talking to Gene earlier about, like, sometimes we're so myopic about what happens at our sites or in our classrooms that we don't recognize what's going on.
Right.
And, you know, I had a conversation with my mother about this, who works in our district since 92. She's still teaching. And, you know, I've always felt like the conversation was that the union is a necessary evil, or the administration is a necessary evil, right?
Okay, both.
Just that dichotomy of having, like, there's some teachers who are going to suck, but we don't, you know, how are we going to take care of those guys? And then there's some APs or principals who suck, and how are we going to take care of those guys?
Right.
So, I don't know. Do you get, I mean, does that make sense as the lay person, or no?
It makes sense. You're just having a stream of consciousness here. So I'm wondering.
I love it. I love it.
Where you're going with this with our guest here. So
Joey Rambles.
So I'm gonna throw this out there, because the 20 people, the 21 people that listen to our podcast are not only educators.
Let's not confuse them.
they're not.
That's half his family though, bro. That's cool.
Right. Some of them aren't educators. You know, some of them are just, you know, parents or just people out there that don't really know much about the profession. And they criticize the association for jumping into politics.
Right.
And we weren't always into politics, were
right.
we?
Right.
So I want you to talk a little bit about that. But, like, you know, why do teachers have a right to organize and step into the fray of politics?
Well, listen, everything you do in your duty day as a teacher is a result of politics. Your curriculum is a result of politics, right? I mean, if you don't recognize that, I mean, No Child Left Behind, the curriculum that's adopted by the state legislature, what you teach, how you teach, what you're able to do, not do, is all a result of politics. It's all a result of who's making the decisions, right? Mm-hmm. Just look at what's going on in states like Wisconsin and what they can and can't teach now after they lost their unions, right? Look at what's going on in Texas, where it's a right-to-work state. And the curriculum, you know, stuff that they have to teach.
So just for some of our people who might not know what's going on. So can you explain what's going on in Texas and in Wisconsin?
Sure. I mean, here are states that now have to, you know, creationism is now a part of the science curriculum, right? Mm-hmm. And that has to be a part of that. Multiculturalism, right?
Ethnic studies
is removed from the curriculum now. No. I mean, all of those things, which, again, in California, we tend to take for granted. And if you're an educator that just goes to your school and teaches the curriculum, you go, well, that's the way it is, right? Mm-hmm. That's the way it is everywhere. We tend to generalize from our
viewpoint
and our experiences, mm-hmm. right? So we tend to think that that's the way it is everywhere. But so, back to your question of why should teachers be involved in politics, to me, that's the number one reason, right?
Yeah.
Because politics is a result of everything that what we do is a result of the political process.
Because I see people often will dismiss the people that we endorse for school board. Oh, that's just a teachers union candidate. You know, they kind of dismiss that without knowing that, you know what? We aren't the kind of union that taps somebody to run. We look at the people that are running and we say we like you. You know what I mean? At least that's been my experience. We're kind of new at this,
right?
But
So, I mean, has it been other ways? I mean, what's giving the layperson or the general public that sentiment?
Well, first off, there's just an anti-union sentiment that's just grown and grown and grown, and it's pretty huge now throughout the country, no matter what kind of union it is. And so they'll lump the teachers' union in with that also. And then there's this idea of just corrupt union where we're throwing out our own slate of candidates. Like, we're choosing somebody like, hey, Rodrigo.
Do you know
we
what?
Think
you
great.
Would be great.
You should run because you're going to do what we say, as opposed to somebody who's already turned in their paperwork and says, I want to run. I'm a good person. And right. We vet them and say, we like you.
Yeah. And you know, I would say that, frankly, there's nothing wrong with saying, hey, Rodrigo, you'd be a really good candidate. Mm. Would you consider running? Because what your beliefs in education are aligned to what our values are, right? Mm-hmm. It's not, we want you to run because you'll do exactly what we tell you to do. By the way, that never works out.
History has proven that
never works out, right? So what you do is you try to find somebody whose values kind of align to your values and under the understanding that you're not going to agree 100% on issues, right. But at least now you have candidates that will listen.
Right.
Exactly.
And so, okay, totally makes sense, right? So I'm wondering about the opposition and what they're seeing, right? And you mentioned it a little bit about like the figurehead, right? Oh, that's what you're talking about. Someone who's coming in and, oh, we want Caesar to be the candidate because Caesar will do whatever we say. Mm-hmm. How often has it happened? Has it happened recently? Has it happened anywhere relatively near us that we can disclose?
No, not near us. But just to be fair to the conversation, and I could be wrong, correct me. I've seen situations where another labor organization that's been at this longer than us has said, this is our candidate.
Gotcha.
You know, you should go along and support this guy too. And that person didn't win recently, so I'm not going to throw out any names or ideas out there. But people tend to look at that. People on the outside tend to look at that as, I don't know, you know, kind of, I wouldn't call it corruption, but they tend to look at it as you stacking your deck.
Mm. Yeah, maybe, right?
I don't.
Right. And I don't. I see anything wrong. And I don't either necessarily because, you know, when the Democratic Party puts out a candidate or the Republican Party puts up a candidate, that's exactly what they're doing.
Right.
That's exactly what they're doing. They're, you know, they hope at least proposing candidates that, again, align to their values, align to what they believe right. in, and will act accordingly once they get elected.
Right. And it's all about the representation, right?
Right.
And they're hoping that they would represent them in a fashion that's consistent with what's going on.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we're going to switch it up a little bit. Educated Guest Podcast, Episode 9 here, Roberto Rodriguez. So you've held several positions in the local Teachers Association here, SEA. You've been a treasurer. You've definitely been president. And I want you to try to paint for our listeners what it is that you do now, because you're in a much larger position. So try to do that if you could.
You know, I'm glad we're having that conversation now, 6 months into it, because
it's 6 learning. 6 months ago, it would have been like,
yeah. It would have been a much shorter conversation. On the board of CTA is really very similar, to be honest, as being on the board of Sweetwater Education Association, right? Your role is to perhaps, you know, develop some policies, help develop a direction for the association, you know, maybe pitch in to whatever the association decides to do in the future, move things along. As a representative, I represent the area. So CTA, being a statewide huge organization, is divided up into, I believe it's 18 regions. And the region I represent is Imperial County and most of San Diego County.
Sorry, how many regions was that?
18. I believe it's 18 regions.
Okay.
Is it the same as like how like CDE would do it?
No, it's different. Okay. Yeah, it's different. Mostly because of population, right?
Gotcha.
So the area that I represent, like I said, is probably southern San Diego County from maybe Del Mar south and all of Imperial County. That's my area. So I have the responsibility of you know trying to help do the fiduciary issues of the responsibilities of CTA, kind of making sure that we're following all the rules and all that stuff. But at the same time, I'm a resource to all of the local leaders and all of the local presidents in the area that I represent, right? So, let's say that a local president it needs some information on, hey, we've got somebody's challenging our election. I'm not sure what to do next, right? Mm-hmm. So they might call me, they might call their staff person, and we can figure out, I can point them in the direction of where to go, who to talk to, that kind of stuff. So I'm a resource. I'm there to kind of help through issues, help through problems, and at the same time, make sure that that our locals in the area have the CTA resources that are due to them, right?
That's cool, man. So what are you most like excited about and nervous about at the same time? Or because that's a big responsibility, man. Like,
The part that I really really enjoy is those conversations that I have with local presidents and watching how local presidents take their associations and take their locals and the work that they're doing. And, you get everything from associations like Grossmont, who got, paid family leave for their members, which is pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Even the political, you were mentioning political stuff, the political stuff that happened in San Diego, where they had a major challenge from the charter, statewide charter organization that was putting money into putting candidates on their board, and they were unsuccessful because San Diego, kind of put on a really good campaign and had a good candidate running against them and were able to win. So stuff like that gets me very excited. The ability to help out schools like that and help out local presidents. The other piece that I'm excited about, and at the same time is that challenge that you were asking about, is charter schools right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think Sweetwater is going through that challenge right now, where you're getting more and more petitions for charters that want to come into the district, and we're starting to coalesce, I think, as locals around this issue of charter schools and how do we deal with them in a way that's best for public education.
Right. So around how many locals would you say that you are responsible for? Local associations. These are teachers' associations.
Right. So I think between Imperial and San Diego, the part of San Diego that I'm responsible for, there's probably around 30 to 40 locals.
Wow, that's a lot. Yeah. And that's a lot of teachers to be dealing with.
Yeah.
What I also want to ask you about is, so you're helping the locals, and I don't want to say down here, okay? But I want to know what other circles you're moving in, right? Not above your level, but do you understand what I'm saying?
Right.
So are you meeting, you're meeting statewide, obviously.
Right.
I think that's clear. Are you meeting nationally also?
So my role nationally is very limited, really. It's the representative assembly that NEA holds every year. But that's
anybody can go to that.
Signs
up or
right.
tries to run. Yeah.
But other than that, CTA as an association has a number of board members on the NEA board of directors. That's not my role. That's I don't deal with NEA very much.
Okay.
So So the only dealings I have with them is through CTA's members of the board on NEA.
Oh, I see. And so you do meet with other regional directors in the state.
Yes.
There.
Yes.
And how often do you go to these meetings here?
So the CTA Board of Directors meets every month.
Okay.
So I just got back from our last meeting.
Okay.
So we meet every month in Burlingame, which is where the main offices are.
And tell us what's the hot topic right now?
I was going to hop in and say, huh. Let's play a game called "Tell Us Something We're Not Supposed to Know."
So
obviously, the hot topic right now is the outfall of the November elections, right? What are we going to see from the federal government under a Trump administration, and how education is going to be affected, how labor unions are going to be affected? Right now there's a lot of speculation, but, you know, when you see a person like Betsy DeVos as the nominee for Secretary of Education, that's alarming.
All right, I want to take this small break here to remind our listeners that our opinions are ours and ours only. They in no way reflect upon any of the institutions or organizations that we have worked for. And that's it. The sounds that you're listening to are by Carl Golden. It's Hey Joe by Jimi Hendrix. And I don't really know Carl, but I found this shit on YouTube and it sounds great. So I put it up in my podcast. So you can look them up yourself. All right, let's get back into the interview. Yeah. I wouldn't say worrisome, because that's not quite strong enough of a word.
It's very
alarming's even a little tempered. Okay. So
I try not to scare our 21 listeners.
Well, all 21 well of played. Them are knowledgeable to know. They're like, this is not fucking good.
We haven't done an episode since before the election. So I did that episode where it was Bernie supporters that, you know, had to switch over to other candidates, and I had a Trump supporter. I had a Clinton supporter, which was easy, and then I had the Green Party, Jill Stein. So anyways, you know, I kind of stayed away from making a reactionary podcast after the election. I stayed away from
it. It would have been real easy just to get out there and vent.
For real. And I always want to keep this – podcast centered around education, so I really didn't want to just go full steam towards politics, right? But I think for the next 4 years, no matter who gets into that spot for Secretary of Education, whether it's DeVos or somebody else that Trump taps, I think we're going to have a lot of political ammo, a lot of things to discuss in the realm of education. Absolutely. And politics.
How much of that do you think is really? Because I wrote about this the other day. I don't know how much is actually. Are we a little more insulated in California than we would be in other parts of the country? I mean, that's kind of how I feel. Like it's. Fine, whatever. That's a shitty move. That's a horrible pick. But Superintendent Tom Torlakson has come out and said that they're going to fight against a lot of that stuff. So I don't know how much. I mean, you tell me. You're up in the mix.
So, circling back to the original question of why are teachers involved in politics?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Sure.
This is why.
This is why. Yeah. There you go.
When CTA endorses a Tom Torlakson for Superintendent of Public Instruction. This is precisely why, right? Mm-hmm. Because we want somebody that's at you know, in the worst of circumstances, a goalie for us, if you will, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Now, you know, there's only so much states can do, right? If we get rid of Common Core, for example, right? Our members are divided on that one, right? Some of our members would probably be happy to see it go. I think a lot of our members probably wouldn't, and I don't necessarily want to get into the pluses or minuses of that. But that's something that we're going to have to now deal with as a state. We can't just say, okay, we're going to keep Common Core, right? So there are issues that need to deal with, that we'll need to deal with. Funding is another issue, right? If all of a sudden the federal government decides to not put any money into education, even though probably local school districts' budgets are fairly small in terms of what we receive from the federal government, mm-hmm. It would still impact what we do, especially in the areas of special education and stuff like that, yeah, right?
State and federal programs, man.
And here's something that most people don't necessarily equate with education, but you know, we're seeing this move to, you know, repeal and replace Obamacare, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of states, California went all in, right? And they basically have expanded the Medi-Cal, which is basically the Medicare portion of healthcare reform. Mm-hmm. We get a lot of money from the federal government in order to offset that. If all of a sudden the federal government says, no more money for Obamacare if you're a state, that's on you if you want to do it. You know, if California decides, we think this is important, we think we want to deal with this, and we think we want to keep the program as it is, all of a sudden that's $4 or $5 billion that are no longer coming into the state. Well, that money's got to come from somewhere.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you have a tight budget, whereas we wouldn't have had before.
And so, we know where that money's going to come from, right? We know what's going to get cut.
Well, and that's, you know, and
it's part of the game.
And right now, maybe we're okay under Governor Brown, and okay under the current legislature as it is, but we get a different governor and all of a sudden it's a new game.
Yeah. Right. So I want to ask you, you've probably given this a lot of thought. So I want to ask you, what do you think unionism looks like battling anything that comes from the Trump administration? I mean, who do we have to reach out to? Who do we have to make alliances with to make this work?
Look, if we stay in our traditional track, right, of it's about contracts, it's about salary and benefits, and that's the only thing that unions need to really concern themselves with and not worry about anything else, we're going to lose this battle, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to lose. There's no way. To me, unionism in the future, and this is, I'll have to say that this is my personal opinion, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm beginning to see this opinion kind of spread. I think we need to be engaged with our communities. We need to be engaged with our parents. We need to be engaged with our students. We need to be engaged with other unions, right? We need to really be a part of the union movement, right? I think teachers' unions for the longest time have kind of been a part of the union movement, but at the same time, kind of wanted to insulate themselves from the union movement, right? Even the words we use, we a lot of us call our unions associations. We don't necessarily like to use the union word, right? You know, and that comes from a long history of, you know, teachers, you know, back in the 60s and 70s feeling that, you know, we weren't blue-collar workers and we didn't really need a union. We needed more like something like the AMA, right? A more of a professional organization, a professional association, and not necessarily a union. Mm-hmm. Clearly, that's, you know, that's not true. So, you know, we haven't been calling it a union, but that's what we are. So I think we need to start embracing that. I think we need to start, the idea of social activism needs to be at the forefront of what we do. Mm-hmm. You know, some of our students are being challenged, right? Especially in this area, lots of immigrant students and all of that talk about building a wall and all of that talk about sending people back and all of that talk. You guys know it. You have students every day, right? It scares the crap out of our students, mm-hmm. right? So, and just telling our students, oh, don't worry about it, it's going to be okay, isn't going to cut it, right? We need to be out there in the community. We need to be out there forming alliances with immigrant groups, forming alliances with other unions. We need to be out there forming alliances, frankly, working for, you know, maybe it's a healthcare issue. Maybe we need to work with other organizations seeking a final solution to this healthcare mess that might come up if the Republicans actually are successful with the repeal. So I think we need to really broaden our agendas and form coalitions with other organizations at the same time.
All right. Now, like I told you.
Sorry, that was long-winded.
No. That's exactly what I wanted to hear from you. Yeah. Exactly what I wanted to hear. We do have to make those connections. We do have to protect our students. Teachers in schools are not agents of the INS or Border Patrol, so we're not doing anything but protecting our students here, and that's all it needs to be. But I do want to say again, so I didn't want to do the reactionary podcast, right? I didn't want to do the reactionary podcast, but I do want to tell you, Roberto, since I have you here, that I woke
here
up.
Here we go.
Yeah, here we
right,
go.
Right. Jesus.
I woke up very angry.
I woke up butt naked in a sweat. And all of a sudden.
Oh, wait, that's a different story.
I woke up very angry at NEA and AFT for their early endorsement, okay? And I don't even know if this is even an issue anymore because of other things that have happened within the Democratic Party. But, you know, how do we hold our leadership accountable for even asking us who we like, right? I mean, I know there's not a mechanism for it. There really isn't. And I know that people try to do it at the national convention. They try to throw out a business item and whatnot, but... help me understand this here. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a tough situation. Because really the and I'm just guessing, but you tell me if I'm wrong. The thesis behind your question is, if we had only supported Bernie from the beginning, we wouldn't be in this mess.
That's not necessarily true. That's not okay, necessarily good. True. But they never asked.
Right. Right.
That's yeah.
So here's the problem. Here's the problem with how NEA makes decisions. Right. The decision making body of NEA. Right. The policy making body of NEA is the RA. Right. So the RA passes new business items. They make these decisions. The RA meets once a year. So we either do an early endorsement 2 years before the next election, or we do one very late, you know, in July of an election year, which is late in the process, because an endorsement at that point means very little. Right. Okay. I know that, for example, and I'm not trying to justify it, just for clarity, I was a Bernie supporter, right? He got my money. He got
I was
my
going
check.
There next. Yeah, okay.
He got my
it's
money.
It's called
he
a qualifying my, statement, right?
He got my money. He got my checks. Yeah. In the primary, okay. Right? So I was a supporter of his. And I think he spoke to at least my union values more than any other candidate, right? Mm-hmm. When NEA did the final endorsement for president, which came at the last year's Representative Assembly, which is the endorsement for the general elections, mm-hmm. What could have happened? See, here's what potentially could have happened. NEA does an early endorsement of Hillary, and then at the general election, that could have been flipped, right? Because that again, that's the body that makes the decision. It wasn't even close.
Okay.
So, can NEA do a better job of talking to its members? Yes, probably they could. Did they do anything wrong according to their bylaws? No, they didn't.
No, we know that.
They followed their procedures. Mm-hmm. But I understand the
so uproar who's, that who's supposed to listen that. If your union doesn't listen,
right? Just a phone call. Just call me up. You know what I mean?
Randomly sample. That's it. Randomly sample. Seize. Who do you like? All right.
Cool. So I mentioned things happening in the Democratic Party, and you recently ran for.
I recently ran for the ADEM, one of the ADEM positions, which is the delegates to the state convention up in the area where I live, which is in North County, the 76th Assembly District.
Okay. And is this your first time running for that?
No, I actually ran 2 years ago.
Okay.
At the last election. So And because I may anticipate your next question, I did not win. I did not make it.
Oh, you didn't?
I did not.
No. I thought you made it through, man.
No, not this time.
Okay, so in your district, how many do they select?
So every district selects 7 males, 7 females.
Okay. But just more importantly, why did you run?
I think I really believe the Democratic Party needs to return to its core values, mm-hmm. of a party that represents working Americans.
Labor.
And I think we've kind of gone away from that.
Absolutely.
And so I'm a work within to make change type of guy, right? If I don't like what CTA is doing, I'm not going to throw rocks from the outside. I'm going to get involved and get into a position that I'm in and work from within to try and make those changes.
Yeah, Rodrigo.
Same thing with the Democratic Party, right? I'm on the Central Committee here in San Diego and decided to run as a delegate to the convention because of the same reasons.
No, and I appreciate that because this is the first time that on my social media I saw my actual friends from college or work or what have you. I saw several of them running for ADEM when I didn't see this 2 years ago.
Right.
Okay. And so there's been some articles, some writing about how, you know, people have really been getting more involved with running for ADEM because they want to be a part of the decision-making process. I mean, I even saw one article say that a lot of they're labeling them as Bernie-crats now have run for those seats and won. Right? You seen the same stuff going on?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll just give you my experience. 2 years ago, I got in as a delegate basically because they had, I think at the time there was 6 positions available. They do 6 men and 6 women from each position, mm-hmm. from each assembly district. 2 years ago, and there were 6 guys, right? So we got in by default because there was nobody else running.
Mm-hmm.
This year, there were, I believe, something like 21 candidates for each of the two, males and females.
Wow.
So there's almost 40 candidates.
Wow.
There were 2 full slates. Both of those slates on the kind of progressive side of the agenda. I think a lot of them were very successful. So that's good.
No, it's inspiring. It's inspiring.
It's good.
I never saw it like it happened this time around. So, Educated Guest Podcast, Episode 9, Ask a Union Boss, Roberto Rodriguez.
How many hits were happening?
That's on my business card, by the way.
All right. So, I think I've almost asked everything I wanted to hear from you. Now, is there something that you want to get out there to our 21 listeners?
Yeah.
Or possibly the other 20 that might are on the fence who scroll by and go, this looks interesting, but I don't know.
You know, probably the biggest elections matter. You know, if there's anything that, and I hate to keep going back to the politics stuff, but you know, back in October, late October, when everybody was convinced, or at least the general consensus was Hillary's cruise into a victory, right? Mm-hmm. This was our world, right? This was the union world. Hillary's going to be the president. We may or may not take Congress, but that's okay. But we will have a very different Supreme Court,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
We will have, we'll either get this, you know, Merrick Garland back in, or she'll put somebody else in there that is going to be much more liberal than Antonin Scalia, and, you know, things will look good for us. And it'll put an end to cases like the Vergara case that we fought a year ago, and the Friedrichs case that went to the Supreme Court, that, you know, was going to put us in a unions in a tight spot in terms of agency fee and all of those things, right? Mm. So we went from a world that looked pretty good for us for the near and long term future to one that looks pretty scary, right? Yep. Because we will get another very conservative Antonin Scalia type on the Supreme Court, and chances are in the next few years, given the age of our Supreme Court justices, you know,
he may get to nominate President one Trump more.
May get to nominate at least one more, right? Yeah. Which will really shift the tenor of that court. So what does that mean for us? I mean, talked about California, right? So in California, we've been able to fend off a lot of the attacks on unions and a lot of the attacks on education and things like that because of, you know, it's a very blue state, right? Mm-hmm. So we've been able to fend those things off. But once the Supreme Court makes a decision on, you know, union rights or a union's ability to do business, that affects everybody, no matter how blue the state is, right? So, you know, I think that's important. You know, these are some of the matters that these are some of the issues that you tend not to think about when you go into your classroom every day and teach every day. But it's the kind of stuff that is scary because it can, you know, it can change our world fairly quickly. I have a couple of teachers that I know from Wisconsin that I got to know at the RA a couple of years ago, and they were talking about how their world changed when Walker took away their rights to their union rights, and you know, all of a sudden female teachers had dress codes.
What?
In their contracts, right? If you didn't go to school looking professional as defined by, you know, the school district, you could lose your job.
Teacher Bay.
So it's you know, it's these subtle things that we don't, again, we take for granted because this is our current world, right? And this is what we know, and we think that the way it is how it should be and how it always has been, but it can change. And on that up note,
right. You got to get on because you have a conference call coming up here in a minute, right?
A few minutes. I got a few more minutes.
Any last questions there, Rodrigo? Before you,
I got excited on this mic.
Destroy my mic.
So for
wait, my eardrums.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Whoops.
I can't edit those out, guys. It was,
one was mine. One was yours. But right. Take it easy.
All right.
For a teacher who's on the fence, who's deciding whether or not they should be a part of or be an active member of the union,
right?
What's the your go-to line?
Pick an issue you're interested in. Maybe you don't care about contracts, you don't care about salary, you don't care about benefits, you don't care about negotiations, but you really, really care about curriculum. Okay. Bring those issues to your union and get together with other groups. Other teachers, form a group. Maybe SEA will form a committee, a subcommittee on that particular issue, and start working with the district. I mean, it gives you automatically a heftier voice, right? Because it has some strength behind it. You know, it's not just the four or five teachers that are interested in, you know, bilingual education, or the four or five teachers that are interested in special education, or whatever it may be, whatever that issue is. You know, because you have the backing of the union kind of helping you work those issues out. You know, and maybe it's not even school related. Maybe it is immigration rights. Maybe it is, you know, multicultural or ethnic studies, whatever it may be. I think, bringing those issues
to your local union, to your local labor union, to a local teachers union, and saying, hey, what can we do on the issue of fill in the blank? And I think it's a way to get involved without necessarily being involved in what, you know, the union-y stuff, right? Mm. And I just did air quotes on that.
Yeah, I know. I saw them.
Thank you for the context. We appreciate that.
It was italicized.
Right. Right. But it's a way to do the work that unions need to be doing, right? I've always felt that we should be not just protectors of salary and benefits, but really protectors of our profession, and I think that's one way to do it.
So, pick your issue. What was the issue that either got you in, or what is it? What is your accomplishment that you were most proud of while you were working for your local, while you were serving your local?
Wow. So I'm a government teacher, so I tend to gravitate towards the political stuff to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
But the turning of our school board, right, the election of, you know, our current school board.
2014.
I think that was probably a one of the things that I'm most proud of. Mm-hmm. The other piece that I'm really, really proud of, not because it was necessarily my accomplishment, but because of the way we came together as a local union, was that contractual negotiation where we came really within days, maybe a week or two of going on strike. I mean, we kind of were ready to go, and I'm sure there are people out there that still think we should have, because we had plenty of critics that said we should have. But mm-hmm. When Brand was really messing with our health benefits and, you know, really putting a burden on especially families, and we were able to reverse that and come together, that was a very proud moment as well. Both of those were really good. And frankly, I think both of those things, both of those events, I think kind of one led to the other. Mm-hmm. And you know, the fact that the relationship that SEA's current leadership has with the school district and current superintendent and the school board, I think that's kind of a legacy piece that I'm very proud of.
Absolutely. I agree with that.
So I told you, I wrote you something when you left, you got elected to your higher position that you're in now. And I wrote you something, and I'm going to tell our listeners. And There were three reasons why I got involved with my teachers union. Okay, so one of them was that corrupt board at that time was really fucking with us. Our health benefit, everything. That's why we came within days of striking. So I started to get active. I started to show up to the events. The other thing was there's a veteran teacher. He's since retired. He's a coach there. Right. Ian Cumming. He's a very, very popular track coach.
Right.
Right. He stood up in one of our meetings and he said that he would strike with us. He said, I have no reason to strike. Like, I'm out of here. I'm good. I got no reason to strike. But I'm telling you young people out there, you need to do this for yourself, because this is going to affect, you know, generations of teachers to come in this district. That was phase two. Right. And then after we won our battle, air quotes again, won our battle, you know, people were very upset that we lost. Some people were very upset that we lost the language where the district was contributing a percentage towards our health benefits. Right. I think it was 68% to be exact. But we gave that up. We gave that up and we went to cap language of dollar amounts. And the third thing that really brought me in was the fact that Roberto wrote the membership a letter saying, look, I hear the criticism. I totally understand it. Call me what you will, but this is what we feel is the best deal that we can get at this time. And to me, that's what presidents do. You're not pleasing 100%
right.
of everybody all the time. You're just not. okay? But if you can just be a person, you know, and write me a letter.
Just call me up, baby.
Call me up, just man. Call me up, baby. Call me up and tell me, I understand, but here's why it happened, okay?
It's not so you, it's me.
That's what, in my opinion, that's what presidents do, okay? So I want to thank you because you're part of the reason why I got into this union. Definitely, in a way, part of the reason why I started this podcast, because I wanted to talk about education with educators. I wanted to talk to difference makers in the community. So I hope that you'll come back. Can we get you back sometime?
Yeah, absolutely.
All
absolutely.
Right. All right. Ask a Union Boss, a regular segment on this show, Rodrigo.
So tight. So tight. Ask a Union Boss.
All right. Educated Guests, episode 9. I am Zarf, a.k.a. Caesar Does It on the Twitters.
Rodrigo Aaron Sebia, the quiet, quiet partner. Mr. A.
Mr. A. And find Roberto Rodriguez where?
Roberto63.
At the Twitters. All right. Signing off. Thank you.